I was happy to see that it's overall very positive, and I also got specific comments, so we will address it as I go along. Let me get back into the Bose liquids. So interacting.
Do you need me to leave?
No, you can continue. I just thought I could start on that side of the board. In fact, thanks a lot for doing this. You know, really appreciate that. We'll all get a brighter view of what I write. And it's also kind of interesting, you know, there's a blank slate, you know, like nothing, like our nascent world, and now I'm going to start drawing on that and creating all this. And that's really kind of the fun part of what we do. And you know, it never becomes boring because, you know, the audience is different and I'm different every day. And interactions. So I'm broadly going to do it in the context of three problems. And the way I'm approaching it is we understand what happens in the non-interacting system. So for a non-interacting bosons, and I'm going to discuss today, this whole discussion will be at zero temperature. So for non-interacting bosons, we have the momentum distribution N of k as a function of k is a delta function, which is N delta k comma zero. And N is the total number of bosons. Right? And that's basically the Bose-Einstein condensate, and it describes macroscopic occupation of a single quantum state. Okay, very nice. So we know this from basic statistical mechanics. Now coming to the weakly interacting. In this regime, this is what we are going to do today in more detail. I started the framework last time, but essentially what we are going to see is that even at zero temperature, the condensate will start to get depleted. So this delta function will become just a little bit shorter. So this will become N0. Delta k comma zero, and N0 is less than N. And also we want to say that N minus N0 over N0 over N is much, much less than 1. So the depletion of the condensate is small. Now, we have a conservation law which says that if I sum over all the k states, this must be equal to n. So clearly, the atoms that were pushed out of the condensate by the interactions must go somewhere, and they populate higher momentum states. So this has some distribution at finite momenta, and we will derive this today that it goes like 1 over k for small k. And at large k, it goes like 1 over k to the fourth. Okay, so these are basically the uncondensed. uncondensed bosons. And this is still the BEC. So basically, you're creating some normal liquid or normal bosons even at zero temperature. So this is the important thing, is it's not happening due to temperature. It's happening due to interactions that the condensate is getting depleted. OK, now you can say what happens at more strongly interacting. So we will see examples of all of these. There's an example of this system. Our experimental example are these ultra-cold atomic gases. What's an example of a non-interacting bosonic system? That also can be made in the lab. Rather amazingly, using a magnetic field, you can tune the interaction between these ultra-cold atomic systems and drive it precisely to zero. So you can actually make this idealized limit in the lab. So that is really the very beautiful aspect of these atomic gases, that you can tune it to whatever a theorist might want. Now, coming to the strongly interacting, an example of this is helium-4 superfluid. So in this system, what happens is the interactions are very strong. They are basically, some of you commented on my use of the word basically. I obviously do it a lot, and I never realized that. So, you know, thank you for bringing that up. And I have to catch myself now doing that, basically. And why I keep doing that is because, you know, this is some approximation. So where I do have an exact result, I will point it out. They are few and far between. So here is the potential, V of R. There's a hard core. And then there is some attraction. And it's this attraction that gives you a liquid. But the main point is this: the density compared to some scattering length, Na cube, is close to 1. So this is the density. This is a scattering length. You can think of it as this length here, the hardcore radius. And that dimensionless parameter is of order 1. That's what makes it strongly interacting. And in this case, N of k, as a function of k, you still have this condensate, but it is much smaller. It's only about 10%. So, and then a lot more weight in at finite k. So a lot of weight here, and N0 over N is only about 0.1. Okay? But more importantly, it's not just a quantitative difference between these two. Even the thermodynamics is totally different. So I will point that out later. The specific heat anomaly in the weakly interacting Bose system and the strongly interacting one is quite different. So I will point that out later. But at least in terms of the condensate fraction, which is the theme of my discussion today, it has become much smaller than the previous ones. It's still macroscopic, but smaller than the weak case. OK, and the last one that fits into this whole development are essentially, that's the other word I use a lot, superfluid to Mott insulator. So what happens is if you now crank up the interactions more and more, you can actually go into a very bizarre situation where the condensate is completely depleted. That delta function is no longer there, and the system enters a new state of matter, an insulator. You know, you've heard about many kinds of insulators. Silicon is an insulator. That's what is called a band insulator. Here, it will be an insulator driven by interactions. So this is even stronger interactions. U is a repulsive interaction. And also, what you have here is a lattice. And we will discuss this problem. But these systems can be prepared as experiments by taking bosons in an optical lattice. And I will come to that later. But the main thing, I just want to give you the full picture of what we are going to get to today, is that this condensate fraction, N0 over N, which starts out at 1 for no repulsion over some bandwidth. This is some kind of a bandwidth, which is my scaling parameter, my dimensionless parameter. The condensate fraction starts at 1. It allows us to, this problem gives us a flavor of all of that. We have the non-interacting limit. We increase U a little bit. There is a small depletion, which can be understood within the kind of Bogoliubov theory we will discuss today. We keep cranking up the interactions more. That takes us more like helium-4. And then finally, we go beyond even helium-4. We completely kill the condensate. So beyond that, the system now becomes a Mott insulator. And here, it's a superfluid. And this transition, so today we'll see the first example of a quantum phase transition. Okay, so it's really exciting field to see how you can systematically understand these problems now with different kinds of calculational methods. So one of the comments that was made is, can't we just have one stream of discussions? Because sometimes I'm doing one method, sometimes another method. It would be, of course, much easier on the students if I could somehow develop one calculational method and then just use that everywhere. That would be a bit like having a hammer and saying, where are the nails? I can bang with this hammer. But you know, that's not the nature of the problem. What you have to do is invent techniques that are useful for the problem at hand. Not to have a technique and say, okay, I will look at only problems that my hammer can address. Well, it's a kind of a philosophy of how one goes about it. So what we will see in terms of techniques is, here we will discuss sort of the method here that we are going to develop is a canonical transformation method. Here we will do a variational method. And here, we are going to do a very interesting kind of mean field theory. OK, so you'll see different methods, but they will be the right method for the problem at hand. So let's see how that works out by first looking at the non-interacting problem again. Okay, so the weakly interacting. Sorry, I didn't mean non-interacting, I mean weakly interacting. Okay, and the Hamiltonian we started with was sum over k, epsilon k0, ak dagger ak. That's the kinetic energy term plus the interaction term, the density-density interaction, which is vq ap plus q dagger ak minus q dagger ak ap. This describes an interaction between two bosons with momenta k and p, which are destroyed, creating two new bosons, k minus q and k, sorry, p plus q, and the internal momentum then is q. Okay? And epsilon k0 is h bar square k square 2m. Now, the main assumption, and so let me explain that carefully. Will be that the condensate is macroscopic. The occupancy of the condensate is macroscopic, and the way we will use that is these operators, when they involve k equal to zero, the condensate, we will treat them as C numbers. So A0 acting on the ground state and so this is my ground state with n0 particles. And A0 dagger, similarly, is n0 plus 1 square root, psi 0, n plus 1. And since n0 is large, on the order of 10 to the 6th, I'm going to assume that this means n0 plus 1 is base, is about the same as n0. And even the square roots are equal for n0 much, much greater than 1. So I will treat these operators a0 dagger as a C number square root of N0. And similarly, A0 as a C number, which is also square root of N0. In other words, I will ignore the commutation relations. That's the main assumption. And you can see how that helps. I have a four boson interaction. If two of them just become C numbers, I then get quadratic Hamiltonians. That's what I'm after. Because once I have a quadratic Hamiltonian, then I can diagonalize it. And then the diagrams I wrote down last time are what I will use at lowest order. And that gives me the following Hamiltonian. So I'm not writing those diagrams again. I am just going to take that information from my last lecture and from that get this Hamiltonian. So is half omega n square v naught, where n is n over omega. Omega is the volume. Plus half I have the half because I have included both of these terms, k and minus k. And I have a second term here, a third term here, which is half n should put a prime there. So prime means no sum. So this implies a key not equal to zero. Vk So this Hamiltonian, this was exact. This is now to lowest order. This is to lowest order in the condensate number. So N0 over N is the control parameter. Okay. Now we have almost a quadratic Hamiltonian. Is there a question? You have a question? No. So we almost have a quadratic Hamiltonian, which we would like to diagonalize, and we do that by rotating these operators. That's using a canonical transformation. And this is a very powerful technique. You'll see it again in the context of superconductivity. You can also do antiferromagnets by this kind of transformation. We didn't do that in class because I didn't want to bore you three times using the same kind of transformation, but you can. It's called the Holstein-Primakov transformation, but it's a very similar rotation of these operators. So I'm going to define new operators, bk and b minus k dagger. And these are related by this transformation through these coefficients, uk, vk, vk, and uk. Now I'm going to be, when I want to really make sure you understand my differences, this is a little vk, that's a big vk. If I try to write it around it, then it might look like a u. So try to keep them straight. So here is ak, a minus k dagger. And for these to be unitary, for this to be a canonical transformation, uk square minus vk square is 1. I can choose uk and vk to be real and depend only on the magnitude of k. Okay, and these B's also obey boson commutation relations. Okay, so what's the main physical idea behind these operators? Let me dwell on that a little bit. So what you are seeing is, let's say I'm destroying a boson with momentum k. So bk is, of course, going to be related to ak because ak also destroys a boson with momentum k. But I can achieve a reduction of momentum k also by creating a boson with momentum minus k because that also reduces the momentum by k. So that's the idea. You're mixing particles and holes through this transformation. So now rewrite H in terms of B and B dagger. So I can write down is as an inverse transform of B. And do I have that? I think I wrote that yesterday. It's just inverting that matrix. Is UK minus VK minus VK. Okay, so that's what I'll do. I'll basically sit down, plug it all in, and then collect all my terms, and I'm going to spare you all those details. You can do them in your copious free time, shall we say. And you will get this term plus another term, which is k prime epsilon k. So you should check my algebra here. Vk square minus gk uk vk. Okay, plus half sum over k plus another term, so it looks like we were trying to simplify the problem and it looks even more complicated. But you'll see, very soon we are going to realize something about it. GK UK square plus VK square minus 2 UK VK epsilon K times BK dagger B minus K dagger plus BK B minus K. Okay, let me leave that there. Okay. Now, the point is these U's and V's are, they of course, yeah. Did I make a mistake? Pardon? Oh, no, no GK. No, okay, I didn't define GK. 1 minute. I should have defined GK. Epsilon k zero. Yeah. So epsilon k is epsilon k zero plus nvk. And actually gk I'm just defining to be nvk. So this is the potential. Okay. So this can just, I can also write as epsilon k0 plus gk if I want. Okay, thanks for that. Okay, now the point is, the whole point of doing this transformation was to not have these off-diagonal terms. So that gives me a constraint that this entire coefficient must be equal to zero. So I now have two equations, one coming from that constraint and the other coming from the canonical transformation that requires u squared minus v squared to be 1. Okay, so now I'm going to solve. So I have two equations, which are, I'm going to remove the, I won't write the k's, of the form g square, no, g u square plus v square is minus 2 uv epsilon is equal to 0, and u square minus v square is equal to 1. Now I can satisfy, so here is 1, here is 2. I can satisfy 2 by choosing u equal to cosh phi and v equal to sinh phi, sine hyperbolic and cos hyperbolic. And then that one is satisfied. And then from 1, what I get is 2uv over u square plus v square. So this is g over epsilon. And this is, I plug in these values for u's and v's. And what you will get is tan 2 phi. Okay, so from here I know that v over u is tan phi, and g over epsilon is tan 2 phi. Okay, so you can manipulate this a little more. Let me just write down the final result, is that v square, which is u square minus 1, if I just carry through this whole algebra, will turn out to be half epsilon over epsilon square minus g square minus 1. That's v square. Yeah. So, and let me define E to be epsilon square minus G square. So with that, this becomes half epsilon over E minus 1. And similarly, U square will turn out to be, so that's V square, okay. And if you want, I can write down U square, which will turn out to be, no, sorry. Yes. Here? Tan 2 phi. You know, I know in superconductivity you get a plus sign. And yeah, so because these are bosons, I want to just check. Give me a minute. Because I'm playing with too many of these different. So let me see. What I think the minus sign is correct, but. So let me just write this. It's half epsilon over E plus 1. OK, let me now address the minus sign. So the way I get the minus sign is, OK, V square is sinh, sine hyperbolic square phi. And that is half cosh 2 phi minus 1. OK? And that is half 1 over 1 minus tan square 2 phi minus 1. This. Square root of that. Oh, sorry, these are all hyperbolic. Okay, and then tanh is, of course, I get that. So that's the origin of the minus one. Okay, that's an important point. In the superconducting case, it will turn out to be a plus one here. Plus, so it'll be epsilon square plus some g square in the fermionic problem. Okay, now what are these u's and v's? They are essentially telling us about the coefficients of mixing. It's telling you that your new quasi-particles that you are defining, the new Bs, have, I like this one. The new Bs that you are defining are a little bit of the old A and a little bit of the old A dagger. Okay, so the coefficients of mixing, that's what U's and V's are. And you can we can look at their structure in more detail. But that's what it is. These particles and holes are getting mixed. The coefficients are described by these expressions here for u's and v's. And the consequence of that is that the Hamiltonian now has become linear. Not linear, quadratic, with no off-diagonal terms. So now I have half omega, sorry, that's the wrong board. So my h now has become half omega v naught n square minus, let me actually collect all those terms because I'm not really going to be using them. So let me just define all of this term right here as a ground state energy, E0. This is the ground state energy of interacting bosons. Okay, so my Hamiltonian has now become some constant, some E0 plus sum over k, EK, BK dagger, BK. And what is this EK? These are the new energies, which are given by k square over 2m. That epsilon k0 over there, minus g square. Square root. No, actually, it's not that. Sorry. This was epsilon k square minus g square. And epsilon k itself had that nvk term there. So this itself is k square over 2m plus nvk whole square minus nvk square. And the whole thing is under a square root. Okay, now I can simplify this, remove the square term, and this becomes k square root 1 over 2m
This was squared.
This was squared. Okay, so you get that. And you can show that, okay, just 1 minute. Okay, so at this point, what you see, we have solved the problem that we set out to do, because we have found the eigenmodes of the problem. So at this point, this is the full solution. The problem is solved. And what do we mean by solved? What we mean is that the ground state of this interacting system, psi 0, is given by, is defined by this thing, BK acting on psi 0 is 0. That's what defines the ground state. And this is true for all k not equal to 0. Okay? So what I mean is that the original, if I look at AK acting on psi 0, this is not equal to 0. I can destroy particles from the condensate. But these are these new operators, which are such that the system is written essentially as a ground state plus the excitation. So BKs are what generate the excitations around a new ground state. And that new ground state is defined by a state such that the destruction operator acting on that state is 0. So these are what are called the Bogoliubov excitations. And EK are the energies of these Bogoliubov quasi-particles. Okay, so by quasi-particles, what do we mean? We mean new objects which are not interacting. The old ones were interacting. That's why the Hamiltonian was off diagonal in that basis. But the new ones are not interacting. They generate excitations over and above the ground state, and you can count how many excitations you have made, and that tells us the fluctuations about the ground state. The ground state per se is defined by this operator B acting on psi 0 equal to 0. Okay, now most of the hard work is done. We have these energies. We can look at it for in certain limits. And if I look at EK, you can show from here, just juggling the algebra, that this is NV0 over M square root times K for K going to 0. And it is equal to K square over 2m plus nvk as k tends to infinity. So here it's a sound mode and here it's a particle. And the velocity, so the sound mode tells us that the velocity, so EK in this long wavelength limit, if I define it to be CK, then that implies that C is NV0 over M.
Do you know about dependence of EK of A?
Okay. That's a good point. I was trying to sort of avoid that, but I have to finally address that as well. So you might, okay, let me address. So the question is, what do we know about VK? It's the Fourier transform of the potential, but let's see, if I were to write down something like, you know, the simplest kind of potential, which would be a hardcore potential. So here is V of R. That's A. This is R. Some kind of a hardcore, hard sphere potential. And if I write Vk as integral dr, the Fourier transform of this V of R, then for this hard sphere potential, as you know, the Fourier transform is not defined, right? Because the potential is blowing up, but that doesn't mean we can't define, we can write down a T matrix for these kinds of potentials, not just Born approximation. You have to go to T matrix, sum up all those scattering terms to all orders. And I'll skip that. That's basic quantum mechanics you can borrow. And what you can get then is through phase shifts, which is still well defined, you can write down the scattering length. Which will be equal to A, and Vk then will be given by 4 pi h bar square A over m as k tends to 0. Okay, so what this brings up is, remember we set up the Hamiltonian by saying I'm going to look at condensates which are weakly depleted. So n0 was very close to n. But this brings up another way of understanding this expansion by through a scattering length A. And this term, I want to be in a limit. So this is a potential energy times a volume. So this must be much, much less than h bar square over m, n to the 2/3. That has units of energy times a volume, which would be 1 over n. Right? So this gives me 1 over n to the 1/3. So if I combine these two, I have 4 pi h bar square over m times a. This is much, much less than 1 over n to the 1/3. That implies that na cube is much, much less than 1. So this entire calculation is valid in the low density regime, even when the potential is hardcore. And you can see why, because if the particles are very far apart, then they are not accessing the hardcore. So even for hardcore potentials, our analysis is valid for low densities. Na cube, much, much less than 1. Okay. So let's see. I want to still save this. Skip that. Let me, before I push this up, just say that you can put in these expressions that we have derived for Vk and Uk, and by summing it up, you can actually get the entire ground state energy of this weakly interacting gas, and that's a classic result in this problem by Li, Huang, and Yang. So I'll just quote that. Because it's a lot of algebra to get it, but it's nothing more than taking the expressions that we have for U's and V's and putting it in this E0, and what you get is this celebrated expression. So this is Li, Wang, and Yang. E0 over N is 2 pi h bar square A N over M. And it's not so much that I want to quote the exact result, but I want to bring up what the expansion parameter is in that. So it's 1 plus, it's always nice when you can get these numbers like that, 128 by 15 N A cube over pi to the 1 half plus 8, some constant, plus higher terms, order. Okay, so what I wanted to point out is that it is a pretty non-perturbative result, because the expansion is not just simply NA cubed or NA cubed square root or something like that. You have these log corrections, but that's the result. So it is already quite non-trivial. Even the weakly interacting Bose gas is already quite non-trivial, because it is okay, so with that, we have sort of finished with the ground state energy. Let's play a little more with these U's and V's, because our aim, as I drew up there, was to understand the condensate fraction. So we have seen that the rotated basis has generated for us new quasi-particles. What does that tell us about N of K? Okay. Okay, so we have N of K. By definition, so this is the way you would calculate any object you want. You would write that quantity in terms of your usual A operators. And so, for example, N of K is AK dagger AK, right? And now we want to calculate its expectation value in the ground state. This is the many-body interacting ground state. And this is given by psi zero. I'm going to write A's and A daggers using that expression right up there in terms of B's. And that will give me UK BK dagger minus VK B minus K UK BK minus VK I had a professor in Cornell, Vinay Ambegaonkar, and he always said, algebra is best done in the privacy of your room. It's like balancing your checkbook. But you know, you guys are forcing me to do algebra here, so that's what it is. Balancing my checkbook. Now, it has these many operators, but what saves us is that beautiful expression there which says B, but by definition, BK acting on psi 0 is 0 because it's the ground state. And also the, if I take the bra of this, then I get psi 0 BK dagger is 0. So if you apply this here, you will see that most of the terms vanish. The only term which will not vanish is VK square. And VK, these little VKs are just coefficients. So they come out of this expectation value. And I have psi 0 B minus K B minus K dagger. Psi 0. Right? This is the only term that survives. And then using the commutation relations of B's, this is equal to VK square, psi 0, 1 minus B minus K dagger, B minus K acting on psi 0. And once again, this term acting on that is 0, so you're left with little vk square. Okay, so this is really beautiful. This is how all operators will work out. You will start with their definition in terms of A's, then you'll replace them with these quasi-particles, the Bogoliubov quasi-particle B's with these coefficients, and you keep applying commutation relations, always pushing the B's to the right. And when a B hits the ground state, that is 0, so you are left with whatever else. So what you have found here, so from all this, what you get is N of K, the momentum distribution, is given by VK square. And now we will look at what it does at different momenta.
You said first that we don't take into account the commutation relations for the A's. And you construct the B's from the...
No, we take the A's from the very beginning are bosonic operators.
Yeah.
And they are obeying bosonic commutation relations.
Yeah, but you said we didn't take them into account because they're large.
Oh, sorry. This is K not equal to 0. Okay. So that's a good point. I should say right here, K is not equal to 0. So the point about that expression there, when I write my H as E0 plus the BK dagger BK terms, K is not equal to 0. Okay, the 0 momentum is still part of the ground state. Question? No. Okay, now this, okay, so. Any other questions? Okay, so now we can evaluate VK. VK is given by the expression up there with epsilon and E. We have all the ingredients, and we can evaluate that. So let me erase, I need everything now. I don't feel like I want to erase everything. So let me erase I'll erase the hard sphere. This is something we can keep in mind. Okay, so I can now evaluate the condensate, which is just N minus the depletion of the condensate, which is N minus N0. So Actually, let me write a few things here so we have all the definitions in one place. N is sum over all k, okay, of n of k. This is sum over all k, and this is n0 plus the sum over prime vk square, okay? And this summation I can now do because I have the expression for vk square, n minus n0 over n is sum over k prime vk square. And I'll just write it down, and this integral is best evaluated in Mathematica, unless you are, you know, Li Huang and Yang or Bogoliubov. And in any case, for what we want, it's not important. So what I'm going to do is write down the expression for vk square, take out all the dimensional terms outside, and I'll be left with a dimensionless integral of this kind. Dy, y square plus 1, okay? And so this term is what I care about. You can see that this is going like some coefficients, na cube over pi square root. So again, it's this na cubed, which is the controlling parameter, and that is much, much less than 1. So this is a way to check that the approximation we've made is justified, right? Sometimes we make some assumption and then solve the problem, but it's good to go back and check, was that a good approximation? And this shows, yes, indeed, we had assumed the condensate was small, and when we calculate vk square and sum it all up, it does give us a small condensate, so it's justified. And the behavior of n of k is what I checked. That's another thing you can expand and check right up there in blue. At small k, n of k will go like 1 over k, and at large k, it has this k to the fourth tail. Okay, so with that, we have basically found the result, the solution of this weakly interacting Bose gas. Questions? Okay. So, yeah.
About the integral, are we integrating y squared from 0 to infinity?
Yeah, with all of this.
Yeah, but that separates into two.
Oh. Mm-hmm. That's a good point, yeah? Your point is, but there will be a cancellation between the two.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
But do you know how g depends on the momentum?
How g depends on momentum?
Yeah, how do you know?
So g, we wrote down, was vk, right?
Yes.
G was nvk. And vk was this 4 pi h bar square over m times a. So its momentum dependence at long wavelengths is basically, it's a constant.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So that's as far as the weakly interacting gas is concerned. It gives us a very well-controlled calculation. The main virtue of this calculation is that it tells us about this canonical transformation. That's a good tool one learns. Now, coming to the strongly interacting system, helium, for example, let me push this up. In helium, the story is quite different. Okay. So in now helium, 4, for example, it's a very dense system. So Na cubed is of order 1. The question is, how do we solve such a problem? The Hamiltonian, again, is given by sum over I, pi square over 2m, plus some pair potential, v ri minus rj. Okay, and this pair potential, as I drew up there, has a hard core with a little attractive tail. This potential depth here is quite small. It's 9 Kelvin in terms of real parameter. Yes? Oh, yes, yes, there is a square root. Sorry, there is a square root. Let me just check. There is a square root. Yeah, there is a square root. And I will leave that for you as an exercise to show that.
It's true. It would converge to 0.0.
Okay. Okay, so there we have an answer. This integral converges to approximately according to, and I'm trying to get, I'm getting your names finally. Give me your name.
My name?
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Yes, I'm starting to make these correspondences between the pictures I have, and 1 week is a long enough time to start doing that. Okay, so that is, what did you say, 0.5?
4.7.
Okay, now helium has a pair potential like this, hardcore pretty much, like we talked about, that gave us that scattering length, but it has a little negative part, which is crucial for it to become a liquid, but also the negative piece is very tiny. It's only about 9 Kelvin. So here it's minus 9 Kelvin. And it's this distance is about few angstroms. So about this hardcore radius is about 2.6 angstroms. And as was explained to me, this 0 comes on top of the A. I'm learning these things from some of you. It's a Swedish scientist, I'm told, by Gustafsson. Okay, so now the key point here is that it's a dense system, so Na cubed is of order 1. So how do we solve this problem? Okay, and the way it has been solved is a very ingenious idea of using wave functions. It's a variational approach. And this was first introduced in 1965 for this problem by Macmillan. And what was the idea here? The idea was to look at very general properties of this wave function for bosons. And what are some of these? On very general grounds, we know the following. This is the, what is known, psi zero is the exact ground state. So we know the following, that it's a bosonic system, so psi zero of R is symmetric under Ri to Rj exchange. And R here is a macroscopic variable of all the coordinates. Okay, so this wave function, of course, depends on the coordinates of all of these particles. But we know if we exchange any two coordinates, we must get a symmetric function. The second thing is psi zero is real. You know, time reversal is not broken. And the third point is psi 0 is non-negative. In other words, it is nodeless. And this, for this, there's a beautiful argument by Feynman, which you can look up in his book on statistical mechanics. And the main idea, it's very much like a Feynman argument where, you know, it's like a magician making these arguments, you know, fast and quick, but they are true. And the argument is this, that if, so let me spell it out. Okay, but in an, I'll spell out the argument in just a bit. But the point is that psi is non-negative, which means it would, it could look something like this. This is not allowed. This would be a node. So this is not allowed. But it is, it could have zeros if there's a hardcore, but in general it'll be positive. So this is the structure of psi of R. You know, you might ask, what am I plotting? This is a many-dimensional space, but you could imagine fixing all the coordinates and just plotting it as a function of one of them. Okay? So this is psi of R. So I fix all the other particles, I move one of them, and I ask, how does the wave function change? And our, Feynman's point is that if you look at the function with the node, and you just take the mod of that, the absolute value of that, you can show that it has the same energy as the original state with the node. So the mod psi and psi have the same energy, but now you can smooth out that, that very sharp cusp that you got by taking a mod. So the mod would have been something like this, right? This would have gone there. But you can smooth that out just a bit because you don't want these gradients, which cost a lot of energy. So you can reduce the kinetic energy by smoothing out the cusp without changing the potential energy. And if with that, then one can argue that psi zero is non-negative. But if you want to see it in more detail, take a look at the statistical mechanics book by Feynman. And the fourth point is that psi zero is non-degenerate. So what this allows us to do is, what this allows us to do is make some judicious guesses for the wave function. How am I doing with time? My watch seems to have stopped again. Is it past noon? Okay, we'll just take a few more minutes. So, so part of the reason I can do this very quickly is that most of the work, unfortunately, has to be done numerically. That's one of the drawbacks the moment we go to the strongly interacting system. So what I'm going to do next is at least write down what is a good or a possible trial wave function. So, is to choose a trial wave function. So for example, psi t of r, a possible choice, which is building in some of the physics coming from the near neighbor repulsion, is to write a kind of what is called the Jastrow wave function. It's a product wave function. So this is a Jastrow And it builds in, from here, builds in two-body correlations. And it is multiplying one. Okay, so what you're doing is you're taking the non-interacting wave function of bosons. We are always writing it in k-space, macroscopic occupation of one momentum state. In position space, what that says is that if I look at any configuration, this is R is a configuration of bosons, right? It's specified by giving the positions of all the particles. If you had just a non-interacting system which is condensed, the amplitude of that configuration would have been one. Every configuration, when things are not interacting, come in with an amplitude one. Now you want to correct for that, because at short distances, you want to say, well, there should be some correlation physics at short distances, and F should have a form of this kind. Should go to one when the relative spacing becomes large, and it should go to some small value. If it's hardcore, then it should be completely suppressed. Otherwise, it should be suppressed to some value if it's not exactly a hardcore. But that's the kind of suppression you want to put in. And for what Macmillan did for helium-4, he chose something like an exponential form. Alpha divided by R to the power beta, and alpha and beta are parameters. Variational parameters to be determined. Okay, so what you have achieved from here is an intuition that you have managed to build into the wave function. That's what you bring to the problem. The intuition that because of the pair potential, which has a hard core, you're going to suppress the amplitude in the wave function when two particles are close together, right? So that intuition has been built in, but you haven't been able to achieve analytical simplicity because your variables here are still many particle variables. So what that amounts to is, if you want to calculate something like, say, the energy, it will be an expectation value in the trial. So let me call that the trial energy. It will be the expectation value psi t, h psi t, and that amounts to, if I write out that ET even more explicitly, it's a sum over configurations. Let me write it as an integral, actually. Integral over all of these DRs, psi TR. These are your del square operators and the interaction operators. Okay, so what you have is a very large multidimensional integral. So this is a multidimensional integral. And even Mathematica or even supercomputers can't really solve these because you can see how many particles you have. And helium is not even a million. That was the cold atomic gases. Helium is 10 to the 23. So we are never going to achieve that kind. But we don't need to, because what we want is not to integrate over every variable and every position that it can be at. We want to only integrate over the space where psi square is large, because psi square is like a probability. And if you only look at that part of configuration space, so here is some large configuration space, and side trial has some shape like that. We don't know what it is, but it is large somewhere in some part of this phase space. And if you could only integrate over that portion, you could get an estimate of this trial energy. And this is a little bit beyond what we are talking here, but this is achieved by using Monte Carlo methods. Now, have you heard of these methods in the context of Ising models when you were doing statistical mechanics? OK, so there again, you have a similar problem. You have spins up and down, but you have many spins. And as a result, you have like 2 to the n configurations. And of course, when you're doing the trace of the partition function, you're not going to sum over every possible configuration. That's too large a space. But you in that case, you sample states, sample configurations according to the Boltzmann factor. Here, the role of the Boltzmann factor is played by psi square. Because we are at zero temperature, there's no temperature here. But psi square is literally playing the role of the Boltzmann factor, and it tells you which parts of phase space are important and contribute heavily. And those are the only parts you need to sum over. And really, a very basic Monte Carlo will get you that. So this code will literally run on that laptop that is sitting there. And with on the order of, let's say, 1,000 configurations, you can get the energy to within few percent of the true energy. How do I know the true energy? You can do even better calculations than this, which are not variational, which are numerically exact. And those involve, you know, even other different kinds of Monte Carlo. So what we get from here is that the variational principle guarantees that this E trial that we get, we calculate, will be an upper bound on the true energy. This is the true energy, and that's the trial one. So in that sense, it's a very controlled calculation. You know, it's not like you don't know how to trust your calculation later on. You can always try to make a better wave function and see if you come closer to the ground state energy. So that's sort of what completes now the level of discussion we can have here for helium-4. What I want you to take away from today's discussion are two methods that we have brought on the table, the canonical transformation, which we will see again for superconductivity, and the variational approach, which in my view is one of the most powerful approaches in theoretical physics, especially for problems which are completely outside the realm of any perturbation theory. So if you look, you'll see this more in action, maybe not even in my course, even going later on. But you know, if you think of what are some of the most difficult problems that have been thrown up in condensed matter, you might say quantum Hall effect, you know, superconductivity. All of these have not been solved by any controlled, you know, perturbation theory or numerics or any of these techniques. What has been at the heart of the solution for all of them, helium-4, quantum Hall effect, and superconductivity, is a wave function approach. And we'll see the wave function. I've written down the wave function for a superfluid. That's the Jastrow function. I will also write down the wave function for superconductivity later. Quantum Hall effect we won't get to in this course, but the reason all these completely non-trivial problems are solved by a wave function approach is because that's the place where you can use your intuition. So no matter how much calculations you can do, never lose your intuition, because come a new problem, that will be your ticket to solving it. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. Thanks.